I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 78 of Nerd Pride Radio. 78, the number of cards in a typical tarot deck, and the total number of gifts given in the song The 12 Days of Christmas. Coincidence? Probably. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. I am doubly awesome. My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. Our sponsor this week, the letters A and G. Welcome, guys. It is a great week. But I'll get to that in a minute. First, this is the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs! Oh, straight into the master list. My gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. And I actually have some feedback and some updates and some other stuff that I would normally do first. But as it turns out, I own Pariah. I own it. It's mine. I can do whatever I want with it. It's awesome. I can't tell you guys how excited I am. I'm doing my taxes. I got my letter from Rogue Publishing, with my, you know, usual check for like $20 or whatever it is I get every year for sales of Pariah. And, let me back up. 12 years ago or so, maybe a little more, I wrote a fudge-based role-playing game called Pariah, which is essentially an X-Men New Mutants style, kind of superhero-y, super psychic power-ish kind of. But anyway, it's kids who have been snatched up by the government and they're in a facility where their powers are being studied and they have to make an escape. And it's an awesome, awesome game. And I love this game. And I wrote it and it's fudge-based. So it uses the fudge system, which is not a choice I would make now, but I did then. And it was published by Rogue Publishing and it's been on sale through them ever since. And so every year I get a check for a few bucks. And now this year she sends me what she tells me is my final check. And I have a letter from her that says, well, it's been a long time coming, but Rogue Publishing is going out of business and we're closing our doors. So as per our contract, all the rights to Pariah revert to you. It's yours. Go ahead and take it. I'm so excited. I mean, I feel bad for Sharon and Rogue Publishing, because I really appreciate what she did for me in encouraging me and giving me a chance to put together my first professional publication. I mean, she paid for and added beautiful artwork and, she did all the editing and put in a lot of stuff for me and gave me some great feedback. And it turned out to be a really good game. And I appreciate everything she's done for me. But on the other hand, I also, since, you know, again, I'm only making a handful of dollars off of it at this point. You know, we did, had some brisk sales in the beginning, and now it's just kind of money trickles in every once in a while. But now I own it. It's mine, and I can do whatever I want with it, and I don't know what I want to do with it. I mean, I honestly, do I just throw it out for free with all my other games, and then I can tell you that I've got, you know, 3/4 of a dozen others instead of 2/3? I don't know. I've been wanting to rewrite it. I mean, do I rewrite it as a as a Fate game, which is still pretty fudge-based, or do I rewrite it into something more along the lines of my story system games, or something that I love the power system in it. I love the way it works. I've always been very proud of that, and I would love to use that same concept of powers, but you know, kind of rewriting it, and I've always been held back from doing that because, well, I don't own the publishing rights to it. So adapting my own work to something new, I mean, yeah, technically I could probably get away with it, but it's just, you know, I don't want to reinvent the wheel and rewrite all that stuff from scratch. But on the other hand, I can't just copy paste something that Sharon owns the rights to. But now it's mine. So I'm super excited about that, and I have no idea what it means for me or what I'm going to do with it. But it probably means that I'll be able to offer Pariah for free to everybody in some form or another coming up here. I just don't know. I haven't made any decisions. I haven't really even thought about it. Like, literally, I just opened up the envelope yesterday. So this is all I know. So anyway, yay for me. That's awesome. Let's get back to the regularly scheduled portion of the show. We will back up and see what time it is. That's right. It's time for a little feedback. I told you that was coming. Feedback. I had a little bit of feedback this week from several people, but one specifically came from Mrs. Dark, Sarah Beth, and she commented on Aiden being in Shrek the Musical, how much her own kid loves Shrek the Musical, and, you know, if we get a video of it, can we post a link? Sarah Beth herself works as a costumer for play productions herself, so this is in her wheelhouse. She knows the behind the scenes of it. And I just wanted to update you guys on, I guess this is more of an update, but anyway, I wanted to update you guys, feedback into that Aiden did get the part of the Big Bad Wolf, and that means that he gets to wear that, the same costume he wore to be Toto in The Wizard of Oz, he now gets to wear to be a wolf, except this time, in addition to the hot, sweaty, furry Toto costume, he also gets to wear a nightgown over the top of it, because, of course, he's the Big Bad Wolf, and he has to be wearing Grandma's dress. I'm so excited. Oh, wait, and he gets to sing a solo. Two solos. There's a little one at the beginning and then his big number towards the end. I'm really excited for him. This is going to be a great play. Really, really awesome. And then after her compliments to Aiden and questions, she also mentioned that she had to lose all of the respect for him because he dissed on Thundar. And see, I was right. Thundar rules. I don't know what's wrong with you guys. Well, specifically Aiden. None of the rest of you complained. It's just Aiden. Aiden's the problem. I'm sure everybody else is a huge Thundar fan like myself. So I apologize for lumping you in with my ignorant son. You guys don't deserve that. That's my feedback. What's up next? Updates! Also, previously, I was talking about when I heard the two, scientists debating on Infinite Monkey Cage, and the word pugilistic came up, and one of them just stopped in the middle and said, "Wait, what does that word mean?" And then she got her definition, and then they moved on. And so I commented how cool I thought that was to just be able to admit your ignorance. When it comes up, just admit that, oh, I have no idea what that is. Inform me. Instead of, like a lot of us do, kind of glossing over it, figuring we'll pick it up from context, just pretending we know because it's easier or we don't want to seem stupid or something. I said, I wish I could be more like that. I wish. And just this week, I hit on a situation where I actually do that. And something that I do on a regular basis, I'm not saying I'm really good about this. There's plenty of other places where I pretend I know things and I don't. But in this one case, this one type of situation, I realized that, oh, yeah, you know what? I have always done that. Maybe I'm on that path. Maybe I'm a little ways that way. Let me explain. See, we've reorganized our scout troop. And we're in an odd situation where the Boy Scout troop, the old leader, his kid graduated out of Scouts 2 years ago when Jacob did, but the leader just hung on because there was no one else who wanted to take over, and he's just a nice guy, and he continued working with us. Well, now he's moved to another town and can no longer do it. So someone new had to take over, and at the same time, because, you know, in his last year or so, it was really hard for him to follow up. I mean, he was starting a new business, moving to a new town, and scouts kind of got the short end of stuff sometimes. There was just a lot less enthusiasm than there used to be. And so things are kind of a mess, and some scouts dropped out. And so now they don't have enough scouts to fill out a whole troop. Okay. This is a long way to go to get to my point, because most of this is irrelevant, but I'm going to tell the story anyway. And so in order to get the troop numbers filled out, well, I've got some Cub Scouts, the oldest group of Cub Scout, Weebelos, and they're in their second year of it. And my Weebelos group, six of them, all very dedicated, all very gung-ho. They're good kids. We've been having a great time, and they're pretty much done. Like, normally they would, you know, get to the end of the year and they'd fill things out and, you know, we'd have our big ceremonies. And then at the end of the year, they'd do their crossing over so that starting in the summer, they could become Boy Scouts. Well, we're done now. And we checked the requirements and, hey, as long as they're 11 years old and as long as they've fulfilled all their requirements, and they have, well, they can move up now. So we're going to transition over. And so essentially this Boy Scout troop, and this is good for us because the guy who's taking over, he's really dedicated, really, really organized and good at what he does. But because of all the trouble in the past, they've kind of been slow to get started. So now he's got his kids in there starting in that ground floor of Boy Scouts. And even though technically they're a year ahead of my group, they haven't really been able to get anything done yet. So my group's just going to – we're going to cross over now. We're going to join up with them. And we all get in on ground floor together. So all the hard work he puts in for his kid, ooh, it all applies to my kid. This is awesome. But anyway, I tell you all of that story just to get to this story. And this story is that we're sitting down to decide how are we going to set up the new troop. Who's going to be in charge of what? And what they need is someone to... they need everything. They need lots of stuff. But the one that interested me and I wrote down is that I could be a merit badge counselor. All right, I can sit down with the kids, go through the book with them and say, hey, look, if this is the badge you want to work on, here's what you need to do. Here's some of the resources you can look up. Here's people I know in town you could talk to. Here's what you need to do to get this work done. I can be a great cheerleader. I'm really good at that. And so as we're sitting down talking about what that means in practical terms, I just fessed up, as I usually do in these situations, because I know me. And I said, look, if that's what you need, if you need someone to go through these books to be knowledgeable about the merit badges and to guide the kids and give them ideas for what they need to do, I can do that. I said, if you need me to gather up materials and keep track of what they've done from week to week and not lose any of that stuff, yeah, I can't do any of that. I'm not capable of that, so don't put that on me. I've been through all this many times, and I can just tell you that if you put me in charge of actually doing the record keeping and turning everything into council and making sure that, you know, all the dates line up and all that, I guarantee you I will mess it up. Because I always do. I'm very last minute about that kind of stuff, and I'm just not organized enough. And I always mean well. I mean really well, but I can't do it. And these are people who know me now, and they've heard this speech from me before, I think. But quite often I get surprised from people when I tell them that no, you know, cause we, lots of times we're always asking for help with scout stuff or with school organizations or with, there's all sorts of places where you're asking for people to volunteer. You're asking people to step up and help us get things done. And a lot of times all you get is people just look at the ground and they turn away and they maybe want to volunteer for a little bit, but they don't want to get too involved because we've all got busy lives, whatever. Me, I'm perfectly willing to step up. But I also, when I do step up, I tell them very specifically, here's what I'm good at. Here's what I'm not good at. If you put that stuff on me, I promise you it's going to get done wrong. That's just how I operate. And so it is not quite the same thing as admitting my ignorance, but certainly it's along the same lines of just admitting that, hey, look, I know me and I know how things work and here's my strengths. Let's play to my strengths. And then one of you who's really organized, but you can't talk to people or you're not good at the public presentations and the motivating people and yelling at kids. If you're not good at that, but you're good at the behind the scenes organization, then good. You do that part and I'll do this part. It balances really well. And actually, we found someone who is really good at all that behind-the-scenes stuff and doesn't do so much of the yelling and motivating like I do. And so we're going to be a nice balance. She's going to do the paperwork stuff, and she's going to make sure everything is, you know, in the spreadsheets and sent off to council. And I'll take care of the hey, come on, let's go. You know you need to be working on this. Hey, let's pull this up. Let's see what you need. I'm really good at that part. So, anyway, again, this is just another yay me. I like to pat myself on the back and tell you guys how awesome I am, because I'm pretty awesome. I'm so sorry for being so full of myself. That's enough of that segment. What else do I have today? Oh, I already did the gaming table, so that means it's time for Roku! The Roku, I've been watching Attack on Titan. Have any of you seen Attack on Titan? I know you have, Zen. You can put your hand down. Any of the rest of you? Because Attack on Titan is an anime that is actually pretty good. I mean, I know it's acclaimed, and it's I know lots of people who love it. And so Aiden and I finally sat down to watch it together. And I'm just going to tell you, it's a little bizarre, and it is a very grown-up show. It is it does not hold back in the territory of violence. It does not hold back. It is, I'm not going to give anything away to you. The premise of Attack on Titan, for those of you who are not familiar, is we are in some indeterminate future. It is clearly Earth. It is clearly some sort of future, but technology levels are kind of a mixed bag. It's mostly appearing to be like a Renaissance level of technology, but then they've got a few additional things added in, you'll see. And somewhere in the past, the Titans came. And the Titans are mindless giants whose sole purpose in existence is to find and eat human beings. And that's it. I mean, like I say, the giants seem, for the most part, pretty mindless. They have they are giant, naked giants. That's all they are. I mean, and, you know, we're talking like 50, 80 foot tall, huge things with no genitalia, no means of reproduction. They don't seem to need to eat, but they do like to eat people. And that's it. That's all they do is eat people. And they're very tough to kill. And we don't know why they do it. And so humanity now lives in these giant walled cities for protection. And now their protections seem to be failing. And ta-da, we have plot. And it moves forward from there, and it is just a little crazy. It's a little anime extreme emotion again, that same thing that I don't like about anime in pretty much all the forms I've seen it in, that over-the-top emotional reactions on some things. I mean, everybody in it operates at an emotional level of at least a 7, if not 9 or 10 or off the scale. At all times. There's no moments of real quiet reflection. You are either impossibly angry or profoundly sad, or every once in a while in this series, there's a moment of joy, but not many, because it's a bleak, bleak series. And we're about halfway through the, I don't know if there's multiple seasons. I just know we're up to like episode 7 or 8. I don't know how far it goes. Maybe we're not even close to halfway through. I have no idea. Doesn't matter. I'm having a good time with it. It's a little weird, and it's not, I wouldn't say it's, yeah, I don't know. It's not the best anime I've ever seen, and yet it's unbelievably compelling. I can't turn away from it. I mean, every time we've got a chance to fill in, you know, we've got a half hour that we can watch one episode before we go to bed. Oh, absolutely, we're getting it in there. I cannot turn away from this thing. So, and in that sense, I highly recommend it. But again, I haven't gotten to the end yet, so I don't know how it goes. But man, it's really fun. And also on Roku, I'm also still watching Parks and Rec, and I'm watching one or two episodes a night. I think I'm getting towards the end of season 5, so I've got something like 25 episodes left or something like that. I think season 6 is the last one. And Parks and Rec is still a spectacular show. I have decided that Leslie Knope is a goddamn hero. The woman is amazing. I love everything about her. I've never been a huge Amy Poehler fan. I've always thought she's funny. She's, you know, all right, but whatever. But as Leslie Knope, she is a hero. And she is a role model. And she is, Everyone in the world should aspire to be Leslie Knope. They really should. If you haven't watched the show, watch it. Skip season one, start with season two, and watch the show and enjoy the crap out of it. And again, all the characters in this show are real characters, fleshed out people. They started off as sitcom stereotypes, but they all have some depth to them. And these are caring, loving people who actually grow and develop over the course of seasons and have real character arcs. And it's just, it's a good show. It is a good, worthwhile show. Keep watching it. That's it for Roku. We're done here. What's next? Oh, science fiction double feature.
Science fiction double feature.
That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movie reviews for the same low, low price. And today I'm going to do two movies that one that was reviled by the critics. Well, not reviled, but certainly not liked. And one that was beloved by the critics. The first one, the critics did not care much for Horns. I mentioned Horns last week, mentioned I liked it. And I tell you what, the more I think about it, the more I really enjoyed Horns. It was just a good movie. The critics can drop dead on this one. They don't know. It's just entertaining. And it is tonally a little bit uneven. I will give it that. I mean, there's some comedy in it. There's some drama. It's a murder mystery. There's a lot going on here. There's some social commentary. There's a very dramatic, weird ending that, okay, the ending, the grand finale, have a little issue with, but leave that aside. Here's the deal. I think part of the problem is Horns comes off, because it's Daniel Radcliffe as the star coming off of Harry Potter, it makes you feel like it's supposed to be a kid's movie or a teen movie, because it's Daniel Radcliffe and you just associate him with Harry Potter and kids' movies in general. It's not a kid's movie at all. It's you know, you're looking at the ads for it and it's Harry Potter with a set of goat horns and it's obviously some sort of magical fantasy and you just want to lump it into that same group of stuff, but it's not. It's not at all. It is a very adult movie and it just comes off well. I think the commentary is interesting. I think the mystery is interesting. I think the characters are really well developed. And Daniel Radcliffe acts the crap out of this thing. I mean, he really knows his stuff. Who knew when they picked him at 10 years old to be Harry Potter, who knew that they were going to luck out into a guy who is still, as an adult, an excellent actor and still camera ready. I mean, you know, you picking a child actor, you kind of throw on the dice sometimes that they may not be so presentable once they grow up a little bit, once puberty hits them. But Daniel Radcliffe seems to have turned out well for him. What an investment. And he's just really good in this film. Just really good. And Juno Temple, as his girlfriend in the movie, Juno is also spectacular. Really well. I enjoyed this film, and despite the fact that the critics panned it, and most people I know have not seen this movie, it's worth your time. It's on Netflix Instant Watch. That's how we got it, is we just rolled the dice, and it came up Horns, so we watched it. If you've got Netflix, this is worth an hour and a half of your time on a weekend. Seriously, go watch it. Go watch it. You may not love it as much as I did, but you'll get something out of it. It's a good movie. Really liked it. Okay. But the movie that I saw that the critics loved, Boyhood. Have you seen Boyhood yet? Yeah, we just watched it. That piece of crap. Oh, my God, what a terrible movie. Terrible movie. All right, I don't care that it's got a higher Rotten Tomatoes rating than frickin' Finding Nemo, all right? I don't care. All the critics are wrong. Every one of them. That was a terrible movie, okay? And if you have not seen Boyhood yet, or if you have seen Boyhood, you loved it, you thought it was one of the best movies ever, and you are fascinated to hear where I'm going to go with this to explain why I hated it and why it was a bad movie. If you have not seen Boyhood yet, and you would like to, don't listen to this. Skip ahead about 10 minutes, and because I'm going to spoil this movie. I'm going to spoil it really hard, and this is your warning. And I wish I could give you an exact time of where you should skip to, but I won't do that, so, because I'm lazy.
Okay, this is me buttoning in. I know I said I wouldn't do this, but if you don't want the spoilers, skip ahead to 35:35. There, that's how long I talk about this.
Because if you haven't seen it yet and you would like to, I will lay you money that if you go watch it now, you'll enjoy it. All right, because apparently everyone else in the world did. I don't know how, I don't know why, but everyone enjoyed it. But now I'm going to tell you why I didn't. All right. The movie was technically brilliant. All right. Linkletter put together this plan. He found a lead actor who, again, like finding Harry Potter, he finds a lead actor who, as a kid, does really well for these six-year-old scenes. He's six when he does this. All right. And then by the end, he's 18. And we follow this kid, this family, this group of people. All the actors in the movie are followed in real time. They get together once a year and they film a few scenes and then they go away. And then they get together again a year later for another week and they film some more scenes and then they go away. It is a brilliant idea, and that concept plays off really well in the movie. It's amazing to watch knowing that, yeah, you can see them growing up. You can see that these are real kids. You can watch Ethan Hawke go from being this punk 20-something loser to growing up and being just, you know, graying at the temples, mature-ish sort of guy, but a guy who's taken on responsibilities and a guy who has changed in his life. And you can see not just in his acting of it, but you can see it in his face. You can see it in his style. And I mean, the man grew up on camera along with the kids. He grew up. And that part is brilliant. All right. I'm not going to knock Linkletter for that. He did really, really well with that bit. It was a great concept, and that part of it plays off well. The real problem with it, and the real reason I hated this movie, is that it was boring as crap. Okay? Boring. There's no story. There's no plot, and there's not supposed to be. I get that. We are getting repeated slices of life that show just an evolution of a family, just how they get from here to there. But they don't actually go anywhere. And there's no resolution, and there's no... I mean, it's a journey from... Dad is a young loser who then grows up into an old loser. I mean, honestly, when he's young, he's creative but irresponsible. And then he grows up and, oh, he's responsible, but now he's lost all of his joy. There's no happy vision here. Mom turns from this desperate, inexperienced, uneducated enabler at the beginning, growing into someone who can finally stand on her own and yet despairs of humanity and life in general. There's nothing happy in it. There's nothing to root for. There's nothing. All right. But it's more than that. All right. It's also, now I'm going to give it to, I can't remember the name of the kid, the actor who played the kid in the movie, but I will tell you, he was really good. I thought he was really strong. I mean, he was also, his part is to play quiet and pensive and withdrawn a lot, and so therefore you don't see him really bringing it out, but he did a good job. Patricia Arquette, good actress. I personally thought she was a little bit much here. I thought she was a little overacty, but all right, whatever. A lot of people compliment her performance. That's fine. I'm not gonna knock her. She's a good actress. She did a good job. Ethan Hawke was really the strong suit in this movie. And I will tell you, no matter what age he was at in this movie, Ethan Hawke playing the dad, anytime he is with his kids and he's just talking to his kids about life, about himself, about the rules, about how things work, those were the best scenes in the movie. Those felt real and genuine, and they were really touching. I liked those moments. But then, outside of that, yeah, they had a mixed bag of some people were good, some people were bad. Linkletter's daughter, Lorelai Linkletter, I think that's her name, she played the older sister. Not a great actress. Not a bad actress, but not good. So, I mean, just, you know, so she didn't bring a whole lot to the table. Anytime they needed extras, especially kids, they were terrible. The bullies that beat him up in the bathroom were such cartoon, stereotype, two-dimensional bullies. It was sad. And when he gets to he gets to be older, and we've got the peer pressure scene with, you know, with them talking about sex and drinking beer and bragging about their exploits and all that. Again, the other kids in that scene, two-dimensional cutouts of what a teenager is like. There was nothing real about it. I mean, they felt fake, all right? And if you loved this movie, if you're one of those people who loved this movie, you got to that scene in the – they said they were camping, but they're in some sort of shed or garage or something, and they're throwing a saw blade, and they're drinking beers, and they're bragging about all the tail they've gotten. And if you loved this movie, you got done with it and thought this was one of those brilliant movies ever, when you got to that scene, in the back of your head, you knew those kids weren't very good actors, and you knew that dialogue was for crap. You knew it at the time. But you also kind of overlooked it because you thought, well, yeah, but the rest of it's being so good. The rest of this is really good. I can overlook this little piece of crap right here. All right. Same thing with the bathroom bully scene. Same thing with – there's one scene where they get to – he's in a classroom and the teacher says – this is, and this is just setting the scene for us. The teacher says, all right, kids, as you know, we've been working on our – map project or whatever it was. We've been working on this project, so let's everybody get those out and let's, okay. That is a specific bit of dialogue that they tell you right there in the rules for writing dialogue. They tell you never ever have a character say, well, as you know, because you know what? In real life, nobody would say that in that situation. Nobody. It was weak and lame. No, if it was a real school and they really had all been working on these map projects or whatever the projects were, if they'd been working on these projects for how long, the teacher would never have even thought to have to explain to the class, well, as you know, we've been working on our map projects. No, she would have just said, hey, everybody, let's get out your projects. Let's go. All right. That would have been natural. That would have been real. But no, she's giving us expository dialogue that is directed at the audience. I don't want that. That's crap. I'm telling you, this movie was terrible. This movie was really bad. It was really weak dialogue. People say that they improvised a lot of this, and it shows because it wasn't very good. Whereas Linklater says it was not nearly as much improvisation as everyone says it was. He's saying that, no, it was scripted and wielded. Well, you know what? If it was scripted, then you made some really bad choices, dude. It was just lame. I'm sorry. The movie was terrible. And I can't. It got to the very end of the movie, and the disc froze up on us. And we almost decided that we just weren't going to watch the end of it. But you know what? We've gotten this far. Let's watch the end. And so we did. And ultimately, where everyone else in the world has failed, our main character has figured out the meaning of life, and the meaning of life at the end out of the eyes and mind of an 18-year-old kid. The meaning of life is there is no meaning to life. Just enjoy the moment right now. That's it. That's the lesson we learn. I don't know. Now, having said all this, my brother and his family have all watched this movie together, and they loved it. In fact, they loved it so much they've watched it multiple times together as a family. How you keep those kids interested in 3 hours of this for multiple viewings baffles me. Clearly, I am not smart enough to understand this film. All right. Clearly, I didn't see the brilliance in this dialogue. Clearly, I didn't understand the depth of this acting talent. I obviously missed it because everyone else in the world loves it. I feel like, was it from Seinfeld? Being the one person in the world who hates The English Patient, which I've never seen The English Patient, so I can't really, I just remember it from Seinfeld. That's who I am. I am the one person who watched Boyhood and went, wow, that was a piece of crap. I thought it was weak. I thought it was really lame, and I think it was a brilliant idea. And I mean, you gotta look at this. He comes up with this concept of we're going to follow a kid from, you know, essentially his first day of school through to his graduation. That's essentially the movie. There's a little before, a little after, but that's essentially the concept. And when he comes up with it, following this in real time, and we get to see some of the landmark things, you get little bits of history as we go that in the scene they're speaking about 9/11 literally, you know, they're speaking about it just shortly after it's happened. They're talking about elections as they're going on, not knowing what the future is going to be, not knowing if that's going to be relevant. You know, they can't write the dialogue for the teenage kids because when they started this movie, they didn't realize that by the time he's a teenager, every teenager in the world is going to have their own cell phone and that texting and online presence is going to be as ubiquitous as it is. So, this was an ambitious project. This was a great idea. And they did some really, really cool things with it. It was just that the end product was terrible. Oh, all right. Enough of that. Enough. You know what? You guys get it. I hated Boyhood. I am not a fan. I wish I was smart enough to get this movie, but I'm not. And if you liked it, hey, that's fine. You're in good company because everybody else in the world liked it. All right. You were either didn't notice or didn't agree with me about the flaws of this movie. I get that. But, man, that was bad. That was really bad. So coming up though, movies that I want to see right now, really bad. And again, one getting horrible reviews and one getting awesome reviews. And I want to see both of them really bad. Jupiter Ascending, the Wachowski brothers' new film, with Mila Kunis in it. And it is supposed to be terrible. It's supposed to be gloriously terrible. And I really want to watch it. There's something about this movie that draws me, and even knowing how horrible it's supposed to be, I really want to see it. And then also, and I didn't even know about this movie until yesterday, What We Do in the Shadows, which is a movie made by a group of New Zealand comedians, and it is a vampire comedy, and amazingly, a vampire comedy out of New Zealand by one of the main players in it is Jemaine Clement, one of the guys from Flight of the Conchord. And this little indie flick out of New Zealand is getting a 93% approval rating, which, as Boyhood shows, means nothing. Nothing. But I like Jemaine Clement. I like Flight of the Conchords. I've heard him in interviews about it. Well, I heard him in one interview about it on The Nerdist yesterday. And I'm just really excited about seeing this movie. I just saw it on Rotten Tomatoes, and I saw that it was scoring really well. So not only does it sound funny, not only does it involve people that I already like and find funny, but it's getting great reviews. And I'm refusing to read any of those reviews because I don't want to know anything before I walk into it. But I'm looking forward to that one. So Jupiter Ascending and What We Do in the Shadows are my two go-to movies that I really want to see right now. And Jupiter Ascending, I probably won't be able to talk my wife into going with me, so I'll have to wait till that one comes to video. And What We Do in the Shadows will probably not show up at a theater near me, so therefore I will also have to wait till it comes out on video. But man, they both look good. I mean, in very different ways. So, what do I have left? Oh, all right. you know what? Before we move on to the Podomatic, I got a new segment. Clean up, clean up, everybody everywhere. Clean up, everybody do your share. That's from Barney, if you are not familiar with Barney. And clean up means I'm going to go to the master list and just cross off a couple of things that we are never going to get to. So let's just do it. Straight at the top of the list, new oven. Yeah, we got a new oven. My in-laws bought my wife and I a new oven for Christmas because ours has been broken for months, and I tried fixing it and I couldn't. And it basically, the bottom heating element in the oven didn't work, so we could only broil. It only worked from the top, and we put up with that for a couple of months, and it was terrible. And now we have a new oven, and it's a convection oven, and it's beautiful. And when I wrote new oven on here, I thought I had some really interesting oveny things to say. But I think I only wrote it down because I was just so excited that we actually had a working oven that it felt like a miracle. And it turns out it's just an oven. But I can cross that off my list now. Next on the list, Squirrel Girl. I mean, look, we all know Squirrel Girl. She's a hero who has her own comic book again now. And Squirrel Girl was originally meant as just sort of a joke. I mean, her superpower is, you know, she can talk to squirrels and she has squirrel powers. And she was a member of the Great Lakes Avengers for a while. She's got her own comic now. And she's kind of been meant as a joke, but she also just has this real empowerment thing going on where Squirrel Girl pretty much saves the day all the time. She seems like Squirrel Girl. She seems like she has the most useless set of powers, and yet, with the proper application of those powers, she can beat just about anybody. And again, I had interesting things I thought to say about Squirrel Girl when I first wrote it on the list. I had just read up everything that I could find about her on Wikipedia. I went through her whole history. I looked up some of her comics, and I was just really excited about Squirrel Girl at the moment. And then as it sits on the list, it's just never been quite exciting enough to actually get to. So that's it. And then the next one, the next one is one that I'm actually going to use. So we'll skip that. We'll skip that. And that's enough for cleanup. We can do more of this every few weeks and just kind of keep this thing tidy. That way I don't have to transfer all this garbage over to a new pocket mod. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, my pocket mod is blue now, by the way. I just had to make a new one a few days ago, and the only sheet of paper laying around was blue, and it happens to have the Ten Commandments on the inside. I have absolutely no idea why I have a blue sheet of paper that has the Ten Commandments on one side, but it folds up like any other paper, and sure enough, it's working for me. So I think, God, how many have I been through? I think I've been through maybe an even dozen of them by now. They're all stacked up. I have them in my office, and I just keep the old ones stacked up for historical purposes, I suppose. I don't know. Anyway, we're done with that. We've really got to get moving. It's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Holy unfillable prescriptions, Batman! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And the first number that I rolled is 7. But it's really irrelevant because my wife submitted a Valentine's-related question, and because she's my wife, she just gets to go to the head of the class and with Howard Hessman. And I'm just going to answer her question first, regardless of the number. So a question from my wife, Lisa, says, what is the best nerdy Valentine gift for my geeky husband? And, you know, you would think she gives me the question and I decide that I'm going to put it first. You would think I would have planned out an answer, but I did not. What this one reminds me of, I don't know if you're familiar with it, 30 years ago, maybe. I don't remember. It was a long time back. It was in the 70s, maybe. Ann Landers, who, newspaper advice columnist, sister of Dear Abby, doing the exact same job as Dear Abby. Ann Landers had a question from, I believe, a 17-year-old girl that said, my boyfriend and I are 17, and we've been dating for a year. What do you think he wants for Christmas? And Ann swears this was a real letter, and the real answer that she published in the paper was, yeah, never mind what he'd want, just get him a tie. So that's what I'm reminded of here. I've always thought that was a cute line. The best nerdy Valentine gift for my geeky husband. Look, some Valentine-themed dice, something in pinks and reds, rose-colored dice. Wow, that would be super cool. I would love that. Dice are always a good gift for me. Any gaming stuff. Any gaming stuff. That's all I want. That's all I ever want as gifts is gaming stuff. I would be happy every birthday, Father's Day, Christmas, Passover. I don't care. Every holiday, if you buy me a new Pathfinder book or a new Munchkin expansion or new dice or some card game I've never heard of before or anything, I'm thrilled to death. That's all it takes for me. And in fact, if you go onto Amazon or I also keep it on the computer, but if you go in, I've got a wish list of all the stuff that I want. You just pick one out of there and send it to me. Or nanoblocks. Love my nanoblocks. I am up to, I think I have 10 nanoblock sets in my office now. that they keep buying them for me and I only get the architecture series. I don't get, because you can get nanoblocks that make, you know, vehicles and animals and Nintendo themed stuff and all this. I only like the buildings. Nanoblocks are little teeny tiny Legos, little miniature sized Legos. And the nanoblocks, you use them to build, I have a model of the White House and the Eiffel Tower and the Statue of Liberty. And, I think I'm up to 10 or 11. I can't remember. Anyway, the newest one that I got for Christmas, I haven't even started putting it together yet because it's something I have to do. I bring them to work. I put them together in the office, but I can only do it over breaks. And so therefore, it usually takes me a while to get started on them. And then once I do get started, it could take me a couple weeks to finish it because I only do it 15 minutes at a time. But the newest one is I have the Pyramid of Giza with a Sphinx right in front of it. And I'm really excited about putting that one together. But I haven't done it yet, and it's coming. So those are also really good gifts for me. But you know what? If you don't want to buy me anything physical, just spend some time with me and we'll get rid of the kids. We'll go to a movie and we'll just have a good time. That's also awesome, which is actually, by the way, what we're going to do. We are abandoning our children and we are fleeing to another town about an hour away where we've got a very fancy hotel room in this themed hotel where it's these very retro styled rooms, and it overlooks the river, and there's a theater nearby where we may go see some local theater, or we may just get room service, or I have no idea what we're going to do, but we're going to be away from our children and we're just going to spend some time together and hang out and have a good time. And that's all I really need. So, but you know what? Anything you get is going to be great, babe. Anything. 30. All right. Now back to the real list, which isn't even open yet. I am such a bad person. Hold on a second. All right. There it is. And just in case I haven't ordered them yet. Oh, darn it. Last week's stuff is all still on here. Hold on. I'm going to pause you guys while I clear this off. I said pause. There we go. That's better. All right. Number 30 is from Mrs. Darks. And Mrs. Darks says, "What's up with modern horror movies?" And she puts horror in quotes, by the way. They all seem to be found footage or jump scares now. What happened to compelling stories and mythos to draw you in and leave you guessing at the end? Which style do you like better? All right. I think the problem is found footage after Blair Witch Project and now the success of the what's the Paranormal Activities series. Found footage is really, really easy to do on the cheap. So you get a lot of that. They found out that some people could make it work, so therefore, hey, it's fair game, let's all try it. Zombie movies are incredibly popular simply because, well, hey, they're... good Lord, why can I not think today? Because they're all public domain, and therefore... you know, anyone's free to use zombies. You really, all you need is, you don't need huge action. You just need to be able to do a little bit of blood and gore, some makeup and that kind of stuff. You can do it on the cheap. All right. Same thing with jump scares. Jump scares don't require actual writers. They just require jump scares. All the things that make a good horror movie don't necessarily require money, but they do require more work. They require more talent and creativity and often more money. And so therefore you see people do a lot of repeats of what's easy and a lot of repeats of what they know has worked in the past. And therefore, hey, we'll just give that one a shot. And I don't think that all modern horror is going to that. I don't think that all modern horror has gone to crap. Again, I need to come up with some good examples, but I've seen some horror movies in the last 5 years that I thought were really good and really innovative. I mean, I still think that the remake of Evil Dead is one of the best horror movies I've ever seen. It's really well done, all right, and it plays off of the story and mythology of the original. And it is really powerful, and it is really dramatic and really scary. And I really enjoyed the new Evil Dead movie. I mean, I don't know if you'd lump it in with the jump scare kind of thing, but no, it's got more dramatic tension than that. And there's been other stuff I've seen that I personally thought was really good. Off the top of my head, I can only think of, like, if you watch some of the Scandinavian horror stuff I've talked about before, Rare Exports is a great one. Troll Hunter is a great one. And even Troll Hunter does the found footage thing, but does it, it's just a good movie. Rare Exports is an excellent, excellent film that takes a completely different take on approaching the horror genre. It's really amazing. It may be cliche, but some of the, even the comedy stuff, watching Cabin in the Woods or Tucker and Dale versus Evil, movies that can tear down the horror genre and pick it apart, and they can use the jump scares and the cliches and the tropes, and they can use them in order to mock them, but also use them effectively to make real scary stuff. I mean, I think Cabin in the Woods especially turned out to be a really effective horror movie by the end, despite the fact that it's a meta-commentary on horror movies, and despite the fact that it makes fun of it, and there's lots of really funny parts in that movie. By the time it got to the end, I've said this before, it's spoiler, but when it gets to the end, and they're all celebrating, and in the background on the video screen behind them, that poor girl is still getting beat to hell by the zombie family, whatever that guy was. Yeah, my heart is wrenching for her because despite the fact that, oh, it's comedy and we're celebrating and it's supposed to be kind of over, and yet I'm still reaching out to her going, oh my God, no, please don't, God, make this end. You gotta, someone has to save her because you know her story's not over yet. I think there's good horror out there. And my preference, I don't prefer a jump scare. I prefer more thoughtful horror. I thought, when you want to talk about some of that older horror stuff, some of it doesn't hold up for me, but some of it, like Rosemary's Baby. I watched Rosemary's Baby. I mean, we probably saw it just out of college, or maybe even while I was still in college. So it's been 20 years, but I thought Rosemary's Baby was brilliant horror. I mean, that's a sort of psychological horror that is really, really tough to do anymore. And it was pulled off really, really well in Rosemary's Baby. But even the movie Grace, which I still, oh God, Grace makes me squirm just thinking about it. Oh, a movie that is worth watching because you've never seen anything like it before, but horrifyingly, I don't know what to say about Grace. It's a tough, tough movie to watch. But Grace is a horror movie that reminds me of Rosemary's Baby, maybe because it's about a baby and it's about the horrifying nature of this child, the relationship around. Anyway, I think there are people who are doing it. They're just in the minority. I think like any genre, especially a genre that blows up and gets really, really big, I think what you wind up with all the time is these very few prize gems in the middle of a sea of horrible crap, like Boyhood. I'm sorry, no, that was unfair. That was really out of place. So therefore, I think some people are doing it. And I prefer not jump scares. I don't mind found footage, although most found footage stuff I don't really care for. I don't really enjoy it, although I think it can be done well. It's not really to my taste. But I've given you some examples of the sort of stuff that I really do. I mean, again, like Troll Hunter was found footage, and yet really enjoyed Troll Hunter. I thought that was really, really well done. So there's some stuff out there. It's harder to find, especially, you know, when you go online, when you go on Netflix, you've now got a market where anybody and everybody can publish. I mean, hell, I'm putting out a podcast for, you know, 70 people, and the world lets me do that now. And it takes me no money and no effort. I just do it. And so anybody can put stuff out there, which means you have so much more crap out there because anybody can put their stuff online. But it also means you've got those rare finds that you wouldn't have seen otherwise, that it never would have come through if we didn't have this wide open internet to do whatever the hell we wanted with. It's actually kind of beautiful. It's just, again, a lot of muck to wade through to get to the good stuff, but the good stuff is out there. I really believe that. 98. God, at this rate, I'm only going to get through like three of these. Woof. All right, 98, because I got to go get a haircut in just a little bit, so I actually can't stick around as long as I normally would. 98 is from Zimney, who is back. Hey, Zim. Which Ghostbusters would you dress up as for Halloween? Which Ghostbuster? Well, that is a great question. look, because here's the thing. I own four Ghostbusters costumes. I can go as any one of the original four, and that's not a problem for me. And the four costumes are all identical except for the name tag. So really, does it matter which one I go as? I mean, honestly, that's a great question. It really is. I would, personally, my name tag, if I were to own a Ghostbusters costume, if I were to go out as a Ghostbuster for Halloween, my tag would obviously say Venkman on it. All right, that's just clearly Venkman. But it doesn't really matter. I could just as well go out with a name tag that says Jones on it, and it would be just as good and just as funny. I mean, it's really... They wear identical costumes, Zim! 13 is from Talvin. Hey, Talvin. I'm surprised there's no Ronster yet. Ronster just gave me a whole bundle of them. I think he's up to owning like a quarter of this board now, but apparently the dice don't like him today. We'll see what happens. Talvin says, do you think the Die 20 OGL revitalized the tabletop gaming industry? Absolutely. Absolutely. Wizards of the Coast's decision to publish Dungeons & Dragons as the Die 20 system and then accompany it with the OGL, or Open Gaming License, that essentially allowed anybody to build materials out of their basic rules, absolutely revitalized the gaming industry, absolutely turned it around for tabletop RPGs. It was a brilliant maneuver that was far more successful in far more ways than they could have imagined. And yet, it also meant, ultimately, the way it was written, that somewhere within their company, someone, and I don't think it's the guys who did it. I think the guys who created the OGL, I think they loved it and realized what a magic opportunity they had stumbled upon with it and what a great thing that they did with it. But someone in the higher levels at Wizards or at Hasbro, somebody went, well, but look at all these people who can make knockoffs of our stuff now. Look at all these people publishing materials for us using our system, and we're not getting dime one off of that. We got to change that. And so they did. And I feel that the RPG industry is going to – it's becoming again more fragmented and clicky and niche, that people are gravitating towards their own specific stuff. It was too bad. In the days of D&D 3, 3.5, and the OGL, I feel like there was a real community and a real coming together of everyone realizing that, holy crap, look at what we can do. Look at the magic of what we can create. And simply by moving on to D&D 4 and now 5 coming out, they've really quashed the magic that was the OGL. The OGL is still out there. People can still use it. They can still make stuff with it. Hell, Paizo is making a killing off of Pathfinder, all right? And they're doing great for themselves. And people can still, based on that, create Pathfinder material. But you're not seeing as much of that anymore. You're just not seeing the I don't know. It's not being carried along in the same fashion. So, yes, I think it was a dramatic, amazing thing that happened. I'm so glad it did. I'm so glad I got to be a part of that. I've created OGL materials myself that I'm really proud of. And I'm sorry that it went by the wayside, but it probably had to. I mean, it's just there's going to be ups and downs, and things change. So it's too bad, but it got a lot of people in. At a time when tabletop RPGs were becoming really anemic, I think this was a much needed boost. So good question. 15. Hey, there's Ronster. Told you he was in here. What is your favorite Christmas movie? What is your least favorite Christmas movie? Favorite Christmas movie, least favorite Christmas movie. That is tough. I have a real fondness for... I know I'm missing something really obvious here. All right, there's going to be an obvious choice that when someone else says, well, what about this one? I'm going to go, oh, yeah, no, that's my favorite Christmas movie. But A Christmas Story has just been a favorite of mine forever, mostly because when I first watched it, I look a lot like Ralphie, just a lot. When I was a kid, I was Ralphie. My head was a little bit more football shaped, a little more oval. But other than that, he and I could have been brothers. And I've just always been fond of A Christmas Story. It's gotten kind of old now just because they play it to death, or for a while there, God, couldn't get away from it at the Christmas season. And so I feel like it's been a little overexposed, but really like A Christmas Story. A least favorite. Geez, I don't know. I mean, you can name any Christmas movie that, you know, that isn't in one of the... Oh, and also It's a Wonderful Life. I still am very fond of It's a Wonderful Life. I've only seen it 3 or 4 times. I don't want to watch it too much because I think I'll get tired of it. But I like It's a Wonderful Life. My least favorite Christmas movie, I mean, you can come up with anything. I mean, Christmas with the Cranks, Jingle All the Way. There's so many out there that are terrible that I can't nail it down to just one. And as a caveat, I know there's a debate on this, and I know people disagree. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. All right, if Die Hard were a Christmas movie, it would be my favorite Christmas movie, because Die Hard is a perfect film. Die Hard is a really, really well-made film that holds up rock solid over time. Great movie, but it is not a Christmas movie because it's not about Christmas. All right. To me, in my opinion, a Christmas movie needs to be about Christmas. And Die Hard is not about Christmas. It is an action drama suspense. I mean, it's just a rock solid action movie that happens to take place during the Christmas season. But just because it takes place during the Christmas season does not make it a Christmas movie. That's my opinion. And I understand that people will vehemently disagree with me over that. And that's fine. But, yeah, come on. It's not about Christmas. All right? Home Alone. Home Alone, in my opinion, even though technically it's not... See, Home Alone straddles the line. And if it were a better movie, I would be more excited about debating it. But Home Alone straddles the line in that the whole reason everything happens is because it is Christmas. And it's not necessarily, well, it is kind of by the end, once we learn a lesson and the family all gets together, and it's about Christmas, I suppose. But it, you know, mostly it's about a kid who is home alone fending off burglars. But that one again straddles the line. So whereas Die Hard, Die Hard could have been set any time of year and it wouldn't have made any difference. All right. The fact that it happens to be set at Christmas time is just window dressing. Okay. It could have been set during the summer. You would have had the exact same movie. It could have been set, you know, it didn't matter. So anyway, but enough of that. 84. Whoa, I went too far. There it is. 84, I'm sorry. I leave you guys sitting there in silence as I hunt around on a spreadsheet. 84 is also from Ronster. All right, back with a vengeance, Ron. What kind of equipment do you use to make your podcast? Darn it. I have this little, a U23 microphone from CAD is the name of the company. It's a CAD USB microphone that I got off of Amazon for $23. Maybe that's why I thought it was a U23. Anyway, I got it for $23 off of Amazon, and the thing has worked beautifully for me for several years, and I really like this microphone. Other than that, I just have my laptop, and I use free recording software called Audacity, and Audacity does some awesome, awesome stuff for me, and that's it. I have my laptop, free Audacity software, and a $23 microphone, which needs to be replaced now. Oh, and of course, obviously, I have R2, who is a Podomatic bubble stripped out of what was the actual official name of it? It was R2-D2 is in Podomatic, R2-D2 is in, I think it's just R2-D2 is in Trouble. And then Trouble is the big Trouble logo, and it's a Trouble game. And so I have the R2-D2 Pop-O-Matic bubble with my own custom dice thrown inside. There you go. There's all of my equipment. And, of course, you know, web hosting through Bluehost. And then that's it. All right? That's what it takes to make this podcast. 55. 55 is from Zimny. And Zim, I think you're going to be our last one for the day. No, you know what? We'll do one more. We'll do one more. Or the one more after this. Zimny says, what are your plans for the Nerd Pride Radio subreddit? Do I have a subreddit? Because if there is a Nerd Pride Radio subreddit, I've never seen it because I don't go on Reddit. I know everyone goes on Reddit. My son lives and dies by Reddit. Eh, whatever. I've just never been there. So I have no plans for the Nerd Pride Radio subreddit. I understand that like Twitter, like Facebook, like Instagram, Reddit, getting a subreddit for my podcast would certainly be yet another way to drive traffic towards my site or to attempt to. But it's also that much more work. Because what am I going to do on a subreddit that I encourage people to come to my forums? Come to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. I encourage people to come to my forums because that's where I like hanging out. That's where I'm comfortable. And maybe would I get more listeners if I took all the discussion stuff elsewhere to a subreddit or whatever? Maybe, but that's not where I want to live. It's not where I want to be. So I have absolutely no plans whatsoever for the Nerd Pride Radio subreddit. If there is one out there, someone point me to it and show me what's going on over there because I would be thrilled to see that. Number 30. This is our last one. Oh, 30 was from Mrs. Dark. We already did that one. 87. 87 is from Kyle. Hey, it's my brother Kyle who refuses to listen to my podcast. Jerk. Oh, God, that was right. I forgot. I have a plan. I'll implement it next time. I'll tell you guys about it. Don't tell Kyle. I think my next podcast is going to be entitled All About Kyle. All right. And then I'll follow up with the next podcast after that called The Kyle Saga Part 2. And then I'll end with The Kyle Supremacy. And so I have three in a row that all have his name in it. And then in the descriptions for them, I'll actually have descriptions that act as if I'm going to have big conversations about Kyle during the podcast. And I'm revealing stuff about our childhood together and stuff like this. And then that way, I'm going to see if I can lure him into listening to just for a little bit, but we'll see. Well, I'll implement that next time because it's going to take a little bit more planning. So don't tell Kyle. Anyway, Kyle's question, which he claims he won't hear for a year, is what are your thoughts on Daredevil? Is he past the point of relevance? I've just never been a Daredevil fan. Not one of my things. I get it. But he's one of those second string heroes who, look, if you give him the right treatment, he could turn out to be really, really cool. And for those of you who are huge fans and who are insulted now, I'm sorry. He's just not my style. And Daredevil's supposed to be getting his own Netflix series. He's supposed to be, or something, or is he getting a new movie? I can't remember. Either way, he's going to be getting new treatment in the Marvel universe. So therefore, Marvel will be handling it. It'll be part of the connected universe, and it'll be cool. And I think what I'm hoping for with Daredevil, because they want to do Daredevil, and they want to do Power Man, Luke Cage. They want to do Jessica Jones. What's her name? I don't remember the other one. Anyway, doesn't make any difference. they're wanting to do what I think, in my mind at least, I'm calling them the street level heroes. They're wanting to do the more minor power heroes who deal with street level crime and who aren't worried about saving the world every single episode, that they're working on a smaller scale. And I'm excited about those. I'm excited about following a series or following the movies where it's not about, okay, well, we saved the world from this disaster in the last movie. What larger disaster can we have for this movie? Ooh, how do we up the stakes this time now? Oh, now we're on number four. Where do we go from here? I would love to see something that plays out as more of a personal style drama and deals with action and crime and superheroes on a more human level, on a more basic level. I'm excited about that. So Daredevil could be very, very relevant. He's never been my bag, but he could turn out really, really well. So who knows? But hey, I told you that was the last one, and it really is. So we need GLaDOS to give us a recap.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage and Science Fiction Double Feature by Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. All these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends. If you enjoy it, then you need to spread the word and let other people enjoy it. That's what I'm here for. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, maybe even Pariah soon. Two-thirds of a dozen others, all free, all the time. You want to contact me? You could always email me at mike@nerdprideradio. I promise I will actually respond to you. Or find me on Twitter, or where my handle is @nerdprideradio. Or you could even check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a private message, we will hang out together, and we will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. All right, now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before every podcast starts, I put up a little note in the forums that says, hey, I'm recording. Do you have anything you want to add? And then you guys add stuff. So here's what you added. Starts off with Stan, who says, I have a complaint. Oh, no. oh, never mind. I have a complaint. Am I the only one who gets nude pictures from Kyle every Valentine's? I'm not sure what to make of them. Anyway, my complaint is that those from last year were the same as the year before. Is he really so busy writing that he can't snap a few candids? Or maybe he's feeling inadequate now that he's nearly 50. It's all a mystery to me. No, he's my brother, so he doesn't send me any nude shots anymore. That would be really wildly inappropriate. I mean, seriously, we're both married, we got kids. That would be wrong. But my guess is, yeah, he's just really busy writing, dude. It's, you know, he's an artist. He's an artist, and he doesn't have time for your tomfoolery, honestly. You know what? Really, at this point, now that he's on the brink of becoming internationally renowned, you should really just be thankful for what you have. Treasure those photos, and they're going to be collector's items, those digital photos of Kyle in the buff. So, you know, be glad for what you guys had and realize that people move on. That's all. The next one is from Kyle himself. Hey, all right. Kyle, who isn't going to listen to me for a year. Mike, so as you know, I'm not going to listen to this podcast until 2016. Yeah, I know. Here's my problem. I've been sending out a bunch of, how do I say, risque Valentines to select friends. The problem is that I've put on a little weight and just decided to use last year's shots in this year's Valentines. It shouldn't be a problem because I'm pretty sure that last year I used pictures of pooping kittens on the Valentines. Anywho, here's my problem. I've only gotten 2 reviews for my newest book, Motsognir's Game, on Amazon, and none of those are from NPR people. You know, Jeff Hawes, Sarah Koenig, etc. What's up? Ooh. We are bad people. So, hey, all right, everybody, here's your mission. All right, you already went and bought Mutsagnir's game, part of the Norns World Saga by Kyle Jones from Amazon. You already went and bought it, like me, and it's sitting there waiting for you to read it, and you just haven't gotten around to it yet because you've been so busy. All right, well, here's the deal. Me, you, all of us, let's get together and let's actually read it and put out the review, because the first one was really good. You know it was. You read that one and you loved it. It was awesome. And I know, to me, it's just, look, the last one was gigantic. It was massive. And so I think I'm just intimidated thinking that, oh, man, this is a huge book. I need to be psychologically ready for this. But let's set aside our fears. Let's read the book and let's give Kyle hopefully glowing reviews, because I'm sure it's going to be wonderful, but we'll have to read it to find out. So, let's all do that and make my brother happy. Because, I mean, if he's not going to listen to the podcast, it's the least we could do for him, right? I think it's only fair. So let's get on that. And then last of all, the last comment is from Ronster. Ronster says, I wish to contribute to your betrayal, Thundar the Barbarian and cohorts versus the party of adventurers from the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. Who wins? Okay. The party from the Dungeons & Dragons cartoons, their primary power was the ability to defeat any obstacle and overcome anything despite their massive inexperience and incompetence. And even with that ability, Ookla could beat them all by himself. All right? I mean, look, Thundar will be there to hold his coat for him if he wore a coat. But Ookla could do it all on his own. Ariel could do it all on her own. Thundar, any one of them by themselves could certainly take on this party of pipsqueak kids. Absolutely. There's no question about that in my mind. Look, they're bumbling, incompetent idiots. All right? They're kids who stumble luckily into solutions for stuff, whereas Thundar and Ariel and Ookla are seasoned warriors who would wipe up the floor with them. Okay? I mean, yeah. No. There's no comparison. You can sit there and pretend, but it's really, you know, it's really just cheesy writing that allowed those kids to get anywhere. Because honestly, they stumble into the D&D universe and they are essentially first-level characters. And even by the end of that series, they're essentially, you know, what, third-level characters by that point? I mean, come on. It was lame, lame. Thundar, if he even had to bother with the restrictions of D&D class level systems, Thundar is clearly a seasoned warrior, all right? We're talking like a 12th-level fighter, a 13th-level fighter. The guy's amazing at what he does. He would wipe up the floor with them, absolutely. So, no contest, dude. I mean, it wouldn't be pretty, and Thundar might have a little bit of pause, you know, slicing open the skulls of 11-year-olds. But you know what? That's what they get. All right? That's what they deserve for challenging Thundar the Barbarian and his fabulous sun sword. So, I can't help him. All right. And then I post up and say, hey, we're done. So we're done. Say goodnight, R2.